Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 322. I'm your host, John Reardon. Neil is out this week, but joining me instead is connectivity editor Alex DeFritis.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going good. It was, we actually got some news this morning. Our first of the year, Nintendo Indie Showcase. I didn't realize we hadn't had any of these yet.
Oh, is
this
it
year.
The first one?
Yeah, we haven't had one of these since, what, fall or winter of last year, late last year?
Huh.
Yeah, it's been a hot second.
It is the harbinger, though, of the E3 week or whatever the June press
release. We're
still
going to call it E3 week. Yeah. It's just perpetually called that from now on.
There's usually a Nintendo Direct of some sort in May, whether it's indie or like those Pokemon mini directs.
Yeah.
That happened. It's like, okay, now we're gearing up for the big game.
Yep. Stuff is starting to happen. They're getting these out of the way. Yeah. Yep. So, of course, this obviously opened with Sports Story, ended with Silk Song.
Absolutely.
It was, if you didn't see it, wow, you missed a banger.
Loved the Oxenfree 2 in the middle there.
No, it was crazy. I've never been so emotionally affected by an Indie World Showcase.
I cried.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're all in tears.
Of course, none of that actually happened, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I did want to just kind of quickly run through some of the stuff that did happen, highlight some things that we thought were neat from the showcase itself. I personally am started now on the review for Mini. What's the game called?
Motorways. Mini Motorways.
Yeah. Mini Motorways. Which I'm actually having a really good time with. It's a fun little puzzle game about managing traffic as a city grows. And essentially, you have these houses and businesses, and each house and business is a color. And houses that are, say, orange want to go to the business that is orange. And so you have to have everything connected. You have limited number of road tiles you can use up each week. You get kind of like bonus pieces every week, like a roundabout or a stoplight or a bypass and things that can help you mitigate traffic. But it's a very satisfying game to play. Not super complicated, not insanely deep from a mechanics standpoint, but I feel like I could kind of zone out and play it for a long time. So expect a review of that fairly soon.
Very cool.
Alex, was there anything in here that caught your eye?
A couple things. The biggest thing for me was Elekhead.
Yeah.
I love puzzle platformers. Box Boy is one of my favorites of those like little digital releases that came on 3DS. And this kind of reminded me of that, where you kind of shoot off your head and whatever you make contact with gets an electrical charge, and that changes the platforms in different ways to help you get across. And it looks really cool, looks really charming. Very excited for that one. I'll definitely wishlist that one.
Yeah, I believe that's a single developer, solo dev game.
Yeah.
That one looks interesting. I will say that this one's not coming out until 2023, but another Crab's Treasure from Aggro Crab, who previously made Going Under, which is on Switch. I believe it's also on Game Pass. But this is a Souls-like where you play as a crab. And it looks like there's kind of some 3D platforming stuff too. And
it's a Shells-like.
Yes. Everything about this game just looks delightful and like something I want to play. As someone who likes Souls-like games and 3D platformers and, I guess, crabs. It is weird that they didn't start with a crab-based game based on their name. But this was where they were always meant to be, I guess.
Does look neat. I wonder how long it is, because if it's like a short Souls-like, I might dip my toes into that one.
It's Elden Ring. It's totally open world.
I've been trying to like find a Souls game to play. I've already talked to you about Dark Souls on Switch being awful with sound compression. So
yeah,
and I didn't have a great time my first time playing Bloodborne. I might need to give that one another go. So maybe this one will do it for me. Who knows?
Maybe you've got a little while to think about it.
Yeah. Gunbrella also looks pretty neat.
From the developer of Gato Roboto, which is a great Metroidvania.
I have not played that, but that one also has pretty good aesthetics. And this one has like a 30s, 40s noir.
Yeah.
But like set in like sepia tone noir, not black and white noir.
Yeah. What did they, I don't remember how they described it, like noir punk or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one is also 2023. And I don't think, despite the lineage with Gato Roboto, I'm pretty sure this is more of just like a side scrolling action game as opposed to like a Metroidvania or anything, which honestly is kind of nice to have a game that's not a Metroidvania or a deck builder or a twin stick shooter, because that is what all indie games are forever and eternally, apparently.
Maybe this will start the trend of noir punk likes.
That's in an alternate reality where cyberpunk did really, really well. We'd have punk like as a genre.
Wild Frost also looked pretty good. I know that you don't love deck building games, but I enjoy a good old sure. deck builder every now and then. And I'll probably need to see more of that game, but that's not coming out until holiday. So
yeah,
we'll have time.
Yeah. You mentioned Totally Accurate Battle Simulator the show.
Yeah, I guess I did. Not because I'm super interested in the game, but because I was very bewildered by how they were marketing it. This is a game I've seen before.
Oh, it's been out forever.
I technically own this game on Epic Games Store because they give out games for free every week, and I just pick those up without any sort of discretion.
I've never started a game from the Epic Games Store, but I own several.
I started Moonlighter from Epic Games Store and Darksiders. Okay. I got both Darksiders 1 and 2 from Epic Games Store for free.
You can join in 20 years when me and Zach finally get Neil to do a Darksiders game club. You can join in on that.
Very excited for that. Anyways, I do own this game. I've seen it before, but I don't know what it is. Despite all of that, and despite watching about 90 seconds of marketing from them, from this indie world.
I think you're right that, like, it's almost like the marketing assumed you already knew what the game was.
Yeah.
But for those of you listening who saw it and thought it looked weird and don't know what it is, it's essentially just a series of, like, little challenges where they'll present you with an opposing army, and you will have to send in your own army. Made up of various unit types, and then you don't really have control over it once it starts. The two armies just clash, and whoever wins, and it's just a very silly simulation game. But then there's also a bunch of like customization stuff.
So I thought it was like an RTS.
It kind of looks like an RTS,
but you have no control. You're just choosing your class and
characters.
You create the army. You create the units. I thought these were already pre-made.
It's both. There are like a bunch of just existing units, and then there's also modes where you can make units.
Okay. Because I was watching footage and like, where's the UI? How do I interact with these characters? It's just showing me like silly physics stuff.
And that's most of what the game is. It's not a super deep game, but it is very fun to watch happen.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's fine. They went more in depth with like the character builder and like how you could like shift the weight and add accessories and stuff. And like, what's the game, though? That was my entire reaction.
Yeah, you should play it. It's fun.
I feel like I could get the entire experience from just watching somebody else play it, though.
It was very popular on Twitch for exactly that reason.
All right.
It was a very heavily streamed game. I do also want to give another shout out to Curse to Golf, which continues to look awesome. And I want to play that game.
Summer. Some of these are coming up pretty quick.
Yeah, most of these were summer.
I've heard good things about Card Shark. Wayward Strand. I know Joe's a fan. Yeah, a lot of these are neat. I feel like I've heard about Ooblets for years now.
Yeah.
Since like maybe 2016 or 17, I've known about Ooblets.
So one thing that bothered me in the trailer for Ooblets, the music they use has a little motif in it that is just part of the Animal Crossing main theme.
Oh, really?
And like, it's a game that is hard not to, like, when you just catch a glance, like, I'm sure it's very different, but when you just glance at it, it has some Animal Crossing vibes. So to then have music in it that literally has the exact motif that's in the Animal Crossing theme is like, I get it. Parallel thinking. There's only so many notes, like that happens.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, you're making a game that's very clearly inspired by this other thing. Maybe you should avoid using part of its soundtrack.
maybe it's intentional. Maybe they want to like really tap into that subconscious.
Yeah. Like just enough to not get sued.
Mm-hmm.
But enough to make you go, I like this game automatically for some reason.
Right. Anyways, that's my most of my takeaway is a lot of these look neat. Some of them look really neat and are for me, and I'm wishlisting right away. Mini Motorways I might pick up if I feel like dropping $15.
It's only like it's like 140 megabytes. It's the fastest a game has downloaded in a very long time.
Oh,
I'm not used to that happening because the Switch doesn't have great download speed, but I like clicked it and hadn't even left the eShop, and it was like, it's done.
Very cool. And it's an Apple Arcade game, so it probably runs great.
It's Apple Arcade has a great track record on Switch. Every Apple Arcade game should be ported to Switch. They run very well.
But I think the more interesting thing here is actually the discourse around the indie world. Mm-hmm. As in, it seems like for a few people, and this isn't everybody, this is just the people who are allowed enough on Twitter to get like shown on my feed. Mm-hmm. But some people were not surprised enough, or they were somewhat disappointed with the showing here with this indie showcase or indie world. And I think a lot of that's just because of the Silk Song effect of like, there was no big reveal. And I'm not sure if we should be going into these expecting a big reveal when these are supposed to be indies. These are supposed to be smaller games that are not on your radar.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the point is that you don't already know about them.
Yeah. And so it's nice to have like a big name show up, but it's odd to kind of be expecting that in the same way of expecting a one more thing from a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, there will be some of the, because like even some of these games, you know, they're okay. So like Cursed to Golf, I am hyped for that game.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited for it. Now, granted, I think it was just like in the sizzle reel for this.
Yeah, it was shown before.
Yeah, but like, I guess what I'm trying to get to is like, you don't know how big any of these games are going to be yet, because mm-hmm. they're all like, even something like Cursed to Golf, which is probably one of the more known games on this list as far as games that haven't come out yet. Nobody knows if it's going to be big yet because it's in indie that even like a popular indie before it comes out doesn't have like the fan base that like Silk Song has now. Like how many people before Hollow Knight came out were like super hyped about Hollow Knight? Like,
right.
That happens afterwards.
It just seems like the way people approach indie worlds and most directs is more like, how good were they at marketing these products to me? Or how much value or cachet do these products have?
And I think there's an element of like, I mean, I know like we've talked to Neil about this before too, but this concept of people want Nintendo to only show them stuff that they already know exists and expect Nintendo to show them.
Mm-hmm.
And they get mad when they see something legitimately new instead.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. Like, nobody wants a new IP out of Nintendo. Nobody wants ARMS. They want Breath of the Wild too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though you occasionally have a new IP like Splatoon or like Xenoblade that winds up, you know, those can become the key franchises for the company. Nobody wants to see them the first time. They just want to see the exact thing they expect to see and are mad if it's not there. And like you said, it's kind of weird to see that start to translate into these indie events.
Yeah. And even then, every 3 years, I feel like I hear somebody else saying, oh, why doesn't Nintendo make new IP? It's because like you didn't buy the last one.
Right. And they are definitely the same people going, why didn't they show Metroid Prime 4?
Yeah.
Like... You kind of gotta pick a side to some degree of saying like everything can't be at every event. I will also say, like, I think when like Silk Song especially is big enough that when that does get shown again, it's not going to be at an indie showcase.
Mm-hmm.
Like that game has made insane amounts of money. It's really debatable whether it counts as indie anymore. Like Silk Song might be more of, you know, at least a double A game, if not a triple A game, just based on the sheer amount of money it has made.
Oh yeah. And some indies seem to like break into main direct status.
Yeah.
Didn't Nobody Saves the World end up in a Nintendo Direct?
I believe so.
So And that's, you know, that's Drinkbox Studios. Like, they have cachet now, but I don't imagine that the first Guacamelee would have done that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, No Man's Sky is in a Nintendo Direct, which is technically speaking an indie game. Granted, it was published by Sony the first time it came out, but ever since then, it's been self-published. So yeah, it's, if you're big enough, you're not going to be in one of these directs that's made for showing off, you know, small single developer projects.
Yeah, I mean, I'm walking away from this not like super blown away by everything I saw. I have one or two things that I really want to buy when and see more of, and several things that I walked away being like, oh, that looks cool, but not for me. And that's fine.
Yeah, I look at these indie showcases kind of like I look at when Xbox puts out a new round of Game Pass games.
Yeah.
As like, here's a list of things you should look up to see if you care about playing. Like, I'm not expecting to be interested in most of them, but I will be like, cool, here's a short list of things I should check out.
Yeah.
And see if any of them apply to me. But no, I thought this was solid. I've seen worse indie showcases by a significant margin. This one at least had plenty of variety.
That's good mix true. Of
stuff coming out really soon and stuff coming out more in the future.
Not a whole lot of sad games in a row. Remember there was one where there was like three sad games?
There was one with a bunch of sad games. There was one, I think it was a couple years ago now, where there were like four games in a row that were all rhythm games.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, you get these ones where it feels like every game is the same. Like, oh, here's an 8-bit inspired top-down procedural dungeon crawler roguelike. And like, it's just 10 of those for 20 minutes. And it's like, ah, man, like one of these might be cool, but when you put them all together, they sure all do just blend in my brain.
Right. And this feels a lot more curated and like everything kind of stands out.
Yep. I feel like I can remember, like if you say a game from this, I remember seeing it, where there have definitely been some indie worlds where you say the name of a game and I'm like, that could have been any of them.
No one's going to forget Idle Manager.
Yeah, that's a game. I'll send that to Zach to review. Yeah, it's like either a Zach game, maybe a James Jones game.
Would be great. I want to read that review now.
Maybe I'll let him fight it out.
Okay.
But speaking about things that Nintendo should be very concerned about, much like not having nearly enough Silk Song available every single weekend.
They should just get another team to work on another Silk Song so we can have
Nintendo
a Silk Song in between.
Nintendo should buy Silk Song.
Nintendo should buy Silk Song, yes.
Yes. Not the company, just that one IP.
Mm-hmm.
That's their big acquisition. But no, there was a translation of a portion of Nintendo's investors meeting, where Nintendo's president was talking about sort of what their plans are as they start to look at where they might go after Switch with a new system. The spoiler alert, you know, they will do that.
We are now entering Switch 2 discourse. Say goodbye to Switch Pro discourse.
Yeah, I feel like we probably still have a Switch Pro in us before we get to a Switch 2.
Yeah.
Like, based on sales numbers, I think it's going to be a while yet. But the headlines that have been going around for this story are the one from VGC, which appears to be where this was originally sourced from, as far as like where the translation was first posted. The headline is, Nintendo says the transition to its next console is, quote, a major concern, which in that context could mean a lot of different things.
It is a headline.
It is a headline. And boy, is it clickable.
Mm-hmm.
In the context of the translation, the word concern seems to just mean something that they are aware of and paying attention to, which is not much of a story, but that doesn't sell on Twitter.
No, the translator actually like retweeted the article and the headline and been like, yeah, concern is a tricky word. I stand by this translation, but take it in context.
Yeah, which is fair, and you should. And don't write horrible clickbaity news headlines, but hey, that's just me. So this is kind of a nothing news story. However, it does open up an interesting conversation, which is kind of just to say, what exactly does Nintendo do to follow up the Switch?
Yeah.
Do they do more Switch? Do they do something entirely different? Specifically in this translation, they reference that they don't want to have another Wii U situation.
Right. No one does.
No one does. Yeah. And that's part of this being a nothing story, is it ultimately all comes down to Nintendo would like to keep making money, obviously.
But the video games industry would be nice for the industry as a whole for Nintendo to be in a healthy spot.
Yes. Everyone would like all three of the major platform holders to continue to make money. Competition is good. But with this in mind, what do you think, wild speculation, what do you think Nintendo needs to do in the next generation to avoid a Wii U? Like, what does that mean to you?
And that's the thing, is I don't know, and I'm not trying to predict, but it is interesting to think about and talk about, because you basically have two options, which is we make the Switch 2, it's just going to be the Switch, but beefier, it's going to have more computing power, there might be a slight twist to it, or they do something completely different and try and surprise us again and take a pretty big risk, which is what the Switch was initially, and that turned out great for them and basically created this hybrid market. You know, we see the Steam Deck isn't a copy, but it is taking a lot of ideas.
Not a copy is generous. I don't think the Steam Deck would exist had the Switch never come out, is what sure. I will say.
And we've also seen other PC hardware try to do the Switch thing as well, like the Aya Neo.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but I've seen that mini PC. I mean, a lot of these products are like hundreds of dollars more expensive than the Switch, and so I don't think they're competing in the same field.
No.
They're working with a more niche audience. So how does Nintendo surprise a large audience again, or bring over the current audience to a new platform?
Right. Do they just, like, if they do just make a Switch, but with more horsepower, how much appeal does the concept of the Switch continue to have going forward if you just do it over and over again?
Yeah.
And how long can you do that for? Because we were talking before we started recording the show, we were talking with Neil as well, and we were talking about how, like, that's a lot of people are saying that's what they should do, right? They should just make a 4K Switch, you know, a Switch with the power of a PS4. But we were talking about how, like, essentially the NES did crazy good numbers. The Super Nintendo pretty much took what the NES did and gave it more horsepower, and it did slightly less numbers.
Yeah.
N64 did the same thing and declined further. GameCube did the same thing and declined further. Nintendo's home consoles were trending downwards until the Wii. Now, the question in here, like the point of contention, I guess, would be, is the Wii U the doing the same thing as the Wii again problem, or is the Wii U actually extremely different from the Wii?
That's a great question, because it's kind of both, right? It's
right,
a continuation, like, of the Wii brand, but it also has this weird other peripheral that it cannot be detached from.
Right. So, like, from a marketing perspective, it was certainly marketed as if it was the Wii, but more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But in practice, I have trouble reconciling it as being that device.
Yeah.
Because it's just not. Like, it has a Wii in it, like it's fully backwards compatible, but the games that were designed for the Wii U aren't Wii games. Like, they're not the same design philosophy, really. So when Nintendo says we don't want to have another Wii U situation, it's hard for me to even say if that is, you know, doing the same thing but more powerful. Is it just marketing a system badly? Because I think the Switch, if anything, has proved that the Wii U was a good idea because of how many of the Switch's games are just Wii U games, but executed on well.
True. I do think that a hybrid console handheld is different enough from the Wii U and made a huge difference for people who are looking to buy the system.
But it's also kind of what the Wii U was getting at.
Yeah.
You know,
with the off TV play.
Right. The Wii U was trying to provide something you could play on your TV, or your TV could be doing something else and you could still be playing on your controller, which is like almost there. It's not totally a portable, but it is this concept of a handheld home console.
Right.
Like that was there. It just wasn't all the way done yet. Now, what I do think would be interesting is with the Switch, like after the Wii U and after the 3DS, like both of those systems had arrived at this point of having the dual screen thing, whether handheld or home console. And then they ditched that with the Switch. And I don't know if I want to see them go back to that or do something totally new, but I do really miss dual screens.
You brought up an interesting idea with in our Slack chat of maybe doing the Wii U again, but the controller is itself a dedicated console as well.
Right. So kind of like a back, like in the Wii U, all of the guts of the system are in the console and then it's being streamed to the controller. With the Switch, I feel like the technology is kind of there to do the opposite. Have the actual system itself be the controller that then streams to a dock so that you can still be holding it and have that second screen, but you still could get that dual screen experience when you're docked. Because I do think like that offers so many unique gameplay design elements. And even when it's not being used in some crazy way, just having a map sure is nice.
Yeah.
I've been playing a bunch of Xenoblade and like I keep having to pause to like bring up a map separately. And it's like, man, I kind of miss in Xenoblade X where like I would just look down and the map would just be there. Like that sure was nice.
Every RPG with a large menu system and many overlapping systems benefited from dual screens.
Yeah. Or like, I mean, Wind Waker, how you just had your full inventory down there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the same on 3DS with Ocarina and Majora.
Right.
And Link Between Worlds, like just being able to like, here are the items I have attached to these three buttons, but I can also just reach down here and drag any other item out that I need instantly. Like it's a very good interface. And if they didn't go the Wii U route and actually had it be a handheld that just had two integrated screens, it was also nice just from the perspective of like keeping your screens safe because it kind of came with its own shell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very true. But the hinge was kind of a problem.
The hinge was a little bit of a problem, but probably not for Nintendo because that just meant they got to sell more 3DSs.
That's yep.
So like, you know, some intentional design flaws. It's like Joy-Con drift.
I think they have to actually repair those for free every single time.
Yeah, so but how many people actually send them in versus go out and just buy a new pair? You know what I mean? Like, I wonder what the cost breakdown is.
Is it more than their legal fees that they had to pay?
Probably. Joy-Con, they're like $80.
Yeah.
They're insanely expensive and they can't cost that much to make. Like, I feel like the profit margin on them has to be insane.
I don't know what they'll do. It is tricky. It is a concern.
I'm sure they're very concerned.
Yeah.
We should all be concerned. That I do find that element of the story funny because I would love if if you went into a meeting with all these investors and was just like, listen, I'm going to be real with you. We are terrified of what comes next and you should all sell your shares off right now. Like, what a horrible concerned. Way to go into an investor meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
Sell now.
It's very different from, oh, yeah, we're aware that this might be a tricky transition and we're keeping tabs on it.
Right.
Versus we're very concerned.
We're extremely concerned. Miyamoto hasn't slept in weeks.
But it is weird. Like, there hasn't been a successful model other than do something crazy that no one's ever seen before. Like, yes. That's the model. And how do but you keep on doing that?
Yeah, it's a combo of that. Like, yeah, it's a combo of that. And then you do also have to market it. Like, mm-hmm. Wii U was a great example of, you know, you do have to try to sell the system. It will not just magically sell. And maybe give it a good name. Calling the Switch, and not the Wii Portable or something like that was a good move.
I do think that it is probably smart for them to at least have backwards compatibility and maybe remain a hybrid.
Yes.
Or at the very least, a portable. I don't think Nintendo, like, Nintendo has the handheld market down pat, excluding, yeah, of course, mobile, which I believe is probably a separate market, if we're honest.
Yeah. I think the handheld home console question, like, they cannot go backwards from that. Mm-hmm. That is their thing now. They have to have a system they can play both. Or at least, I mean, I suppose they could make two systems. Like, they could do a dedicated handheld and a home console, but they would need to have cross-compatibility in their games. Like, that concept, I don't think they can back away from now that they've done it, because it's so... That is
like
what
a Switch
2
Lite and a
system.
Switch 2 dock?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
the people are always going to complain about, like, how the Switch 2 Lite is keeping the Switch 2 dock from reaching, yes, its full potential because it has to play baby games.
And even the regular Switch Lite now feels like they kind of made it without thinking about the repercussions.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, there are so many games that you just can't realistically play on the Switch Lite.
Ring Fit sold 14 mil, right? Like, who bought that for their Switch Lite and realized, oh, I can't play this game?
Well, Switch Sports, you can't play. I mean, I suppose, like, even in tabletop mode, the Switch Lite doesn't have a kickstand.
Mm-hmm.
You have to lay it on the floor and stand over it to play tennis. Like, it feels like a system that nobody thought about how it was going to actually work with their games.
Now, the only other thing I can see them do is really lean into VR, because the Switch already feels like it's ready for VR. Like, if you just slap that into a headset,
I mean, they tried. They did Labo. It was actually really cool.
I'm not sure if we can count Cardboard as a full-on attempt.
I mean, Google did.
I'll let you have that one, John. I've actually used that before. That might be my only experience with VR, is my grandfather's Android and Cardboard.
It works.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. It would be such an easy transition. And, like, in Labo's defense, I think the Labo VR kit was the only Labo kit that actually sold well.
Hmm.
Like, it sold out, from what I remember.
You must forgive me. I have no clue what the sales figures for the Labo kits were.
I just know that it was way better than any other Labo set.
Yeah.
Like, it actually had appeal. It was easy to, like, because it was a thing that existed. Like, I think the other Labo stuff was arguably, I mean, it's kind of that thing we want from Nintendo of trying something new and weird, but the other Labo stuff, I think, was so weirdly esoteric and cost prohibitive,
yeah,
that it just didn't click. Whereas VR, you kind of go, I understand this. And even it being Cardboard, with, like, the Google stuff, you kind of get like, all right, yeah, a Cardboard VR headset, that is a thing that exists. I get what that is. And I get how my Switch can fit into it, because I've done this with my phone. But now I can do it with Super Smash Bros. Like, there is an inherent, like, that is an easily understood thing that is still kind of unique, because it lets you upgrade people to VR for, like, what was the Labo VR headset base set was like $30. Like, it was super cheap.
And did that have a Project Giant Robot on it?
Not on the VR, no.
Okay. That wasn't the killer app?
No, I mean, honestly, the killer app for VR, I mean, outside of the Labo stuff, it was Breath of the Wild. Has full VR support. It's a horrible way to play the game, but it's there. And I know, like, Super Mario Odyssey also had... like, not the full game, but, like, a VR mode. I feel like there was something else that got a VR update, but I don't remember what it was. Was it, like, Captain Toad or something?
All I remember is Breath of the Wild, Smash, and Mario Kart.
Mario Kart didn't get it, which was dumb, because it totally should.
Wait, did it
not?
Have.
No, it... Well, Mario Kart has the support
has
for
Labo,
the Labo,
right?
Wheel.
Oh, it has the it Labo has, wheel. Okay, that's what I was confusing it with.
Yeah, so it does have Labo support, but not the VR.
Okay.
But yeah, honestly, and maybe it didn't sell as well as I think it did. And they may have already been committed to backing out of Labo before that thing even came out, given how monumentally the first two failed. But I feel like we may have backed out of the Switch's VR potential too fast.
Yeah.
Because the stuff they did with it was actually overall pretty good. Like, Zelda wasn't great, But you could play the whole game like that, and it displayed a lot of like potential for what you could do with other games. Really, its only problem was that you're restricted by the handheld resolution of the Switch. But let's say you had a Switch 2 or a Switch Pro or something that had a higher resolution portable screen, you'd be golden. And yeah, I agree. I think that's something that they could definitely leverage in the future if they wanted to, and have it be way more accessible than anything that Sony's doing with their VR, which they seem to be making up as they go, because they just cannot decide. They seem to have been pretty much caught off guard by the fact that people wanted a VR for PS5.
Yeah. And those Move controllers, though, they had them ready to go.
I'm so glad they're finally replacing those with new controllers. That was the PSVR, great entry-level VR. Why does it use a PS3-era controller that was designed to compete with the Wii Remote as far as functionality went? Like, it's a horrible control scheme.
They just had like a warehouse full of them. It's like, we could just put it in these boxes.
So many unsold ones.
Well, whatever the case may be, Nintendo has a whole lot of options for whatever the next gen Switch or whatever the successor is. But it's just a matter of like which one's the right call. And it's always concerning. Yeah. When you have to come.
Concerning is certainly the right word.
Mm-hmm, when you're trying to come up with the right call.
Yeah, we'll see. I do think we have a long time left.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is just the beginning of a conversation that's going to last like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, we have at least one major Switch revision left, like a hardware level. Like we haven't gotten to the new Switch XL yet. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that's still coming, just based on various leaks that we've seen.
It's going to have like 10% better processing power.
Yeah.
It will download games faster, but like marginally. It will run SNES games.
True. Then we'll finally get, that'll be what we'll finally get Game Boy games.
Because we'll have enough processing power for it. Yeah.
Yeah. It can run N64 games without input latency issues.
Oh, that would be great.
Now we do have some listener mail. I do want to quickly say before we get to the listener mail, because I've mentioned this as we've talked about Xenoblade getting its release date pushed up, I have fulfilled my promise to actually play through Future Connected. I played through it over the weekend and a little bit into the week. It's fine. I have never been so remarkably unaffected by a piece of Xenoblade content. It had a few very nice pieces of music. Most of the best plot points were relegated to unvoiced side quests rather than the primary storyline.
Oh, fantastic.
At one point, a character jumps off a cliff and commits suicide on screen, which I thought was really fucking weird and like out of character dark for that series. But once again, in an unvoiced side quest, while the main storyline just was essentially...
Was it treated a smoke seriously? Monster.
It was treated very seriously.
Okay.
But it was like a thing that you could totally miss.
Huh.
As opposed to the main storyline being like, there's a smoke monster. We need to get the smoke monster. Like, does the smoke monster matter? Not really. It's just we couldn't think of a bad guy. And so there's a smoke monster. I assume that the rift that the smoke monster comes through is going to in some way connect to the plot of Xenoblade 3, because they've talked about how this connects to the plot of Xenoblade 3, and that's the only possible conclusion I can come to.
Maybe it connects to the plot of Lost.
Maybe. I haven't seen Lost in a long time.
It's the only other piece of media that I know has like a smoke monster.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly other monsters that are of various smoke varieties, but Lost smoke monster is just smoke.
It's the definitive smoke monster.
It is absolutely the definitive smoke monster in my mind.
What a weird show.
Weirdly good.
Yeah, it's been that that show had its series finale while I was on my senior trip in high school, and I stayed, like, me and one of the other guys stayed back at the hotel from going to do whatever thing was planned that night, because we were like, no, we have to watch Lost, and it was fine.
Well, you were tuning in for like the lore answers, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, I think by then there comes a point in a TV show where you go, okay, they're ending in this many episodes and I have this many questions. They're not all going to get answered.
Oh, yeah. And it was a popular network TV show. They had to make episodes because they had to.
Yeah, that show went through so many weird... There were like a weird amount of Half-Life 2 and Myst references throughout it. Like,
oh,
it
really?
It was so strange. Yeah, and then Half-Life 2 and its DLC has a reference back to Lost. It's a strange...
The Circle of Life.
It's a strange show.
Circle of Half-Life.
Anyway, yeah, I finished Xenoblade Future Connected. It is by far the weakest piece of Xenoblade media, but it's theoretically only 8 hours long. It took me 15 hours because I did like every side quest.
You did the 100% it?
Not quite. I have some. I think there's some post game stuff I haven't done, and I think there's one or two. There's some quests that I haven't turned in because the quest givers are sometimes only available at certain times of day. And so they wouldn't appear on my map unless I was there at the right time. So I just haven't turned some in, but they're all done.
I guess I'll try that eventually. I do have Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yeah, it's... Have you finished the first Xenoblade?
I haven't started the first one.
Okay. I mean, do that first.
Yeah.
And then if you're like, boy, I sure do wish I had like 8 more hours of mediocre content to really just dull the awesomeness of the ending of Xenoblade, then it's there for you.
Okay. Very nice.
All right. We do have some listener mail. It is from Chariot Goblin, who says, "Hey, Connectivity. With the news of Square Enix selling off the majority of their Western game development to Embracer, many have speculated that they are preparing to be acquired by Sony. If this were to happen, what would this mean for the future of HD 2D, Bravely, and Dragon Quest on Nintendo platforms? Would Nintendo still allow these games to be on Nintendo? Personally, losing Dragon Quest would be disappointing, since the series is best for handheld play. Thanks, and keep up the great work." I'm going to be honest, I don't think that Sony's going to buy Square Enix, but that wasn't really what your question was, but I just wanted to get that out there.
Now, why not? Just to explore that for a second.
I don't think, I don't see the point in Square Enix selling off parts of themselves before being acquired by Sony. That doesn't like, make
do
a whole
lot. You think that Sony, if this was a real conversation, Sony would just buy it wholesale and then sell off the parts that they don't
want. Well, and especially like it's not like it, like I'm guessing that Sony wasn't like, you need to get rid of Legacy of Kain before we'll buy you. and the other thing was they didn't sell it for like what, how much did they sell it for? Was it like 300 million? Which is a lot of money for me, but in terms of like this sort of thing, they didn't really sell it off for that much. So if Sony were going to buy Square Enix, I feel like they would want that stuff too. Like, I feel like if Sony could make, you know, Tomb Raider a PlayStation exclusive, they probably would. Like, why not for that little money? But my other thing is, like, I don't know that Sony can afford to buy Square Enix. Because while Deus Ex may not be worth a ton of money, I do feel like stuff like Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest are probably worth some money. Like those are successful, well-known brands. And Sony, unlike Microsoft,
doesn't have the war chest for it.
No. And that's something that we have to talk about a lot is that Microsoft for Microsoft, Xbox is a like secondary thing. Like Microsoft, Xbox could go bankrupt and shut down today and Microsoft wouldn't notice. Like they'd be fine. Because that's just one of their branches and not even one of their particularly successful branches. Like it's, they don't care. Whereas with Sony, it's the opposite case where PlayStation, for all intents and purposes, is Sony. The rest of their company isn't doing very well. Like PlayStation holds Sony above water. So while PlayStation itself is very successful, they don't have that just infinite cash reserve that Microsoft does to be able to do this. I don't think Nintendo could do it either, in all fairness. Like, this is something that Microsoft is kind of in a unique position to do because they are up there with, you know, Google and Amazon and Disney and all of those companies that just have insane amounts of money and can just be like, I'm gonna buy Star Wars today. Mm-hmm. Most companies cannot do that. And I don't think that Sony could buy Square Enix. And I also don't think it would be a particularly good idea. Like Square Enix is already making games for Sony's platforms. They tend to do best on Sony's platforms. Like, what does Sony gain?
Yeah, there's already a strong connection with Square and Sony. Like, a lot of those games end up being a year-long exclusive, heavily marketed with Sony. Those games are typically tied to that brand pretty well, especially the Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this a similar thing with Nintendo with Bravely Default and the HD 2D games. And that seems to work well. It's like a good strategy. I don't understand what Sony would gain or what Square Enix would gain by being acquired.
Because it's not like, you know, Microsoft talks about how Call of Duty is still going to be multi-platform and like, sure. But Microsoft is buying companies for two reasons. One, to expand their studio base so they can literally just make more games, because that's been a problem Xbox has had. It's just they don't compete on as far as just the number of like just games that PlayStation gets. And then secondly, for a lot of those games, they want to take them away from Sony. Like, they are competing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like Elder Scrolls, Starfield, and like all those Bethesda stuff is going to be Xbox exclusive. And that has value to, like, having Sony lose that stuff has value to Microsoft because it drives people to buy their console. I don't think Microsoft losing Final Fantasy, it, like, nobody was buying an Xbox to play Final Fantasy. So I don't know that that would do anything. But as to your actual question, which was, if this happened, do you think that Sony would allow those games to still be on Nintendo platforms? And I think the answer is no.
Really?
Yeah,
we have seen Sony play ball with MLB The Show, and they've been putting some games on PC.
So for MLB The Show, and I'm going to say this while Neil's not here, and I don't know if Neil listens to the episodes that he's not on, but I believe the case with MLB The Show is that the MLB is who actually pressured that into being on other systems.
Yeah, I believe I've heard that. I think Neil said that.
And that was not a Sony decision. And then as far as PC, I don't know that Sony sees that as direct competition.
Yeah. They see that as extra cash in the bank after a game has been sitting for a couple of years.
Well, and they're not putting it on like the Windows Store or the Xbox Store, whatever the PC Microsoft game store is called, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's just on Steam, correct?
That's the only place I've seen it.
Yeah, I don't think that they put, I'm going to double check that real quick.
You're not getting it on Game Pass, that's for sure.
Yes. So, like, that's the thing. They're not putting God of War on Xbox. They're putting God of War on PC via Steam, which they do not.
Oh, it looks like it's also on Epic Games.
On Epic Games. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not on anything that they directly compete with within the console realm.
Right.
And so from that perspective, no, I don't think they would put it on Nintendo platforms, because I do think Sony and Nintendo very directly compete in Japan. Like, they are kind of a different audience, but I think there's enough competition there that they wouldn't. If they can take some of those games away from Nintendo, then they will. Because while you may not go to Xbox to play a Japanese RPG, I think it is fair to go to both Nintendo and Sony to play a Japanese RPG. And so if Sony could take that away from Nintendo, I feel like they would, because that is something that makes their console more appealing. Do you sound somewhat surprised, like you think they may still be willing to play ball?
I can't say that I have all the knowledge to be like, no, you're wrong, but I do.
I mean, I'm bullshitting. I don't know anything either.
But I do see a trend of, well, especially with like Microsoft and with Sony with the PC stuff. And there was a recent article that that said that Sony is spending some money to put more games on multiple platforms. So
mm-hmm.
I think they're I'm not sure if they would say no completely, you know? Yeah. Maybe it might be after a year we'll put it on Switch. But if there's money to be made on other consoles, even if that doesn't directly drive interest in like console sellers, like maybe not put all the console sellers on Nintendo day and date, but
yeah,
the smaller games, like the HD 2D games, the Bravely games, leave those on Nintendo because they already have an audience and they sell well, they do well there. I don't know. I'm no businessman.
I guess. Okay, so here's a question. Let's flip it. If Nintendo bought Square Enix, do you think they would put them on PlayStation?
I can't. What would be like a dumb, like, backwards move? Like, Nintendo would put them on Wii U.
Right.
Like, what would be the dumbest thing?
Like, I think because I think one of the reason we're having this conversation is because, like, Microsoft has shown that willingness to be like, yeah, we'll put this thing on Nintendo.
And Microsoft does push Sony to do things. I've seen that before. The whole PS Plus is somewhat a response to Game Pass, not entirely a same copy, but it is trying to follow a similar model
a
competitor.
It is to Game Pass what the Steam Deck is to the Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not nearly as good, but speaking to a specific audience that might like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think that I think that this idea of a console maker who doesn't mind putting their games out on multiple consoles is a perspective that is kind of unique to Microsoft. Because I feel like since they've already been doing that with their console and PC, largely day and date for such a long time, they kind of have a different view on it. And I also feel like Microsoft, as the only American company in this running, so Sony competes with Xbox and Sony competes with Nintendo, but I don't really feel like Xbox competes with Nintendo, if that makes sense. And that's that, like Xbox has been bringing stuff, has brought some stuff to Nintendo, but they haven't really brought stuff to Sony. Yeah.
Why don't we have GoldenEye, John? If that's true.
I assume the rights for GoldenEye are a nightmare.
Yeah, sure. As all rights are.
Because, yeah, the only thing that Microsoft's put out on PlayStation is Minecraft, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Whereas Nintendo, I mean, it's not like they have a ton. They have Cuphead and Minecraft and something else that I can't think of. Super Lucky's Tale wasn't directly through Microsoft.
For whatever reason, I thought that was a Microsoft owned game.
It was at one point a Microsoft exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they had anything directly to do with the Switch version. I could be wrong, but it does show up in those lists of games that are like Microsoft games that came to Switch, just because it was at one point an exclusive. Also a great game, everybody should play it. But yeah, so I feel like right now where the console makers' heads are at, I feel like that's exclusively a Microsoft thing. That only they are really in a position where they see that as a viable strategy. I think everybody else looks across, like when Sony looks across the table at Xbox or at Nintendo, they see direct competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's this weird divide between Switch and Xbox where they're like, they just don't feel like they're directly competing.
Yeah. And also does seem like Xbox is totally okay with Nintendo having some of their games without Nintendo ever reciprocating.
Yes. Yeah. Because that is not a two-way street. Yeah. Well, okay. We say that. But I do remember like when Rare Replay was coming out, there was some so the Donkey Kong Country games, I'm trying to do this from memory, but I think the Donkey Kong Country games like disappeared from the Wii Virtual Console. And then right around when Rare Replay was announced, they came back up. And I know there was some speculation that there were maybe some lingering rights to some of those N64 games that Microsoft didn't have. And that they essentially did a trade with Nintendo of saying, hey, you guys can do, like, here's everything from Donkey Kong you didn't have. And then they go, cool, here's everything from Jet Force Gemini that you didn't have. And we have seen that relate. I mean, I think Smash Bros. Is obviously, that's a Nintendo game and it's not on Xbox or anything. But, like, that cooperation is still there. Banjo-Kazooie is on NSO, which is a game that Microsoft is actively selling on their own platform.
But again, Nintendo is not selling anything on Xbox.
Yes. But they are... they do make Xbox look good. Like, there was so much discourse when Banjo-Kazooie came to Smash and when it came to NSO about how cool it was to see Microsoft and Nintendo cooperating. Like, there is, I think
Sakurai did recommend Banjo-Kazooie.
Right, like,
on Xbox before we even had it on NSO.
That would actually be a very interesting piece of insight to have, is what the average Nintendo's fans perception of Xbox is following all of that stuff. Because I would bet that a lot of Nintendo fans have slowly gained more appreciation of the Xbox brand because of how they've been willing to play ball with Nintendo. Like, they come off very well in that relationship.
You know, you might have a point. I did buy an Xbox controller last year, despite hating their ABXY or the way that they're laid out.
Well, you just, I mean, it's, you know, it's the Dreamcast. Xbox is just the...
I never had a Dreamcast.
The phoenix that rose out of the ashes of the Dreamcast. I got a Dreamcast like pretty much like a month after launch. I was a Dreamcast fan, and then like a month later, it was discontinued. But it was a good 2 months.
You're just doomed to love consoles that never pan out.
Yeah, I've actually been playing a lot of Dreamcast on my Xbox Series X.
Oh, nice.
Via RetroArch, and which feels somehow appropriate. Because, like, all the buttons are right.
Yeah, that is true. Except there's no second analog stick.
I've said it before, but I'm baffled that Dreamcast games were never brought to 3DS, given that they have virtually the same, roughly the same, like, hardware level and the exact same control layout.
Hmm.
Including the little VMU screen.
I'm trying to think what I would want from Dreamcast.
Power Stone. I feel like the Sonic Adventure games probably would have sold really well.
Yeah,
on
they would have
3DS.
Actually. Yeah. City Escape in 3D. That would have moved.
That would
consoles.
Honestly be cool. I don't even like that game, and I think that would be cool.
It has a really good like opening 45 seconds. That's about it.
Honestly, like Power Stone's kind of like little diorama stages would look really cool in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of those Crazy Taxi would be cool.
Skies of Arcadia.
Yeah,
no, you're right.
Yeah.
There would have been some good opportunity there.
Yeah.
Mega Man Legends 3 would have also been great, but hey.
Hey, yeah, I agree. That'd be cool. Occasionally I see like a screenshot from that game.
Yeah, and it just kind of breaks your heart.
Mm-hmm. It makes me so sad because I'm like, man.
Yep.
So close. Anyway, did you have any final things to add on Sony buying things and not letting anybody else play with them?
I think Sony doesn't do things out of the goodness of their heart, but if the market pushes them to do something like crossplay, for instance, I feel like,
yes,
given 3 to 5 years of Xbox doing something successfully, Sony will break and they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
But
they'll only do it once not doing it starts to make them look bad.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's my final statement, is I agree that right now, current Sony would probably not put anything on Nintendo. But if something starts to make them look bad, if something starts to hurt their ego, then maybe.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. So with that, I think we'll call that an episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you're listening to this on a place where you can review it, you should do that. That'd be very nice of you. Preferably a good review, but, you know, wherever your heart leads you. You can follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. You can email us your listener mail at Connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com. We have gotten some suggestions that in our break from the 3D Zelda Game Club, we should play Link's crossbow training. If you support this or have a different suggestion, that'd be a great topic for some listener mail.
Someone brought up Link, the CDI games, so I'm not sure those if you really want to commit to that.
I feel like we can reject them on that premise, as if we needed an excuse. Though I will say, the two side-scrolling ones have really good soundtracks. Like, despite being terrible games, the soundtracks are pretty good.
I'm not sure if you're allowed to say anything good about those games.
I will. The soundtracks are great.
You're breaking the gamer rules, but...
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Here we are.
I won't say anything good about Zelda's Adventure. That is an unmitigated disaster. Oh.
Just watching footage of that is just... It's horrid. Yeah. It's eye poison.
Yeah. But yeah, with that, thank you for listening, and we will hear you, listen to you, talk to you, at you, next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.